Hello and welcome back to Atlanta. Today we're asking, are you mad? What are we doing in the music industry? Fatherhood, a gift shop inside of a museum, inside of an old house, and good old-fashioned colorism. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Oh my gosh, guys. It's a Stevie Wonder medley of deliciousness tonight. We talk about what it means to be black in the South, what it means to be a sibling in entertainment. So many things to discuss today. They're going to spend this entire time talking about the show because there's just so much to dissect. I just want to dive right in. Starting to my far left, panel, introduce yourself. Kelly.
Hello. Kelly Boyd, but some of you may know me by Chaos J.
I don't
want to
sit by him.
I'm sorry, I couldn't help myself.
What's up? It's Drew Jones.
Hey, y'all, it's Ivana Williams.
And I'm Joelle Monique. Let's literally not waste even a second. Let's just dive right in.
Three, two, one, go.
This is a much longer episode than we're typically used to. Yeah. Usually an episode's about 22 minutes with commercials. Tonight's episode was about 40 minutes with zero commercials. And we talked a little about this super intense episode with feelings of like Get Out and The Shining and a bunch of other horror films. A little bit of the autopsy of Jane Doe in there, which freaked me right out. How do we feel about not being able to escape from the hellhole that was this episode?
I've never missed commercials so much in my life.
Girl, I was saying the same thing. I was like, I need a commercial break. Like, give me a break, man.
I was like, I will take any commercial. Give me a Vagisil commercial. I don't care. Like, I need something. Because I was just like, it was just so uncomfortable. And it only continued to be more and more. It was an amazing episode. But it just put me in such a weird feeling. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And also, I had like this sense of like anticipation waiting for commercials. And then by the time I realized they weren't coming, the episode was over.
Yeah, it's like, you're strapped in, we got you now, it's too late, so just stay tuned. Like, oh, I can't go nowhere.
Like, I'm stuck.
Yeah, this is it, for me too. So I like it, though, because I don't think we see a lot of black faces in suspense and in horror films and stuff like that. So I enjoyed it just for what it is, but it also creeped me the hell out.
Yeah.
It certainly felt like a little mini movie, which is always a lot of fun to watch. Yeah. I'm noticing a lot of shows trying to veer into short form filmmaking as opposed to standardized television. We saw it a little bit in Gotham earlier today. And I think it probably has a lot to do with the pickup of streaming. Mm-hmm. And binge watching. So, yeah, it was emotional. There were several times when I wanted to stop watching.
I feel like, yeah, okay. I feel like they have the closed captioning before the show all the time, but I feel like I need a better, bigger trigger warning too, because I'm like, no, wait a minute, wait. Because at the very end, we were all just like.
Well, for me, first off, shout out to the fact that they've given us a pretty nice range, going from the Helen episode to the barbershop episode to now. Like, we've covered a big spectrum. But another thing is that as I'm watching this the whole time, all I'm thinking to myself is, how is Darius so calm and collected? Like, because just from when he walks in and he say, man, he's there in the corner. Like, that.
Is that Mr. Wonder?
Right. That like, he's literally in the shadows. Like, that right there just speaks creepiest. And so.
You can curse here. This is an explicit podcast.
Oh, that's
you
right.
Don't have
it
to
does.
Censor
okay, that means so go back to your car and go home.
Like, there were so many moments, and I'm pretty sure we all share the same sentiment. There's so many moments where I'm like, you know what? Fuck that piano.
Yeah.
Leave.
Yeah.
Get out.
Yeah.
Literally.
It not only did it feel like an ode to Get Out, it almost felt like a prequel to Get Out. You're like, Darius, this is how you end up.
This is how we got there.
This is how it happens.
This is scary.
You're too curious.
And I hate to say this, it's going to sound wrong, but low-key it's not wrong because it's kind of true if you watch horror movies, especially from the 80s.
What's happening?
I felt like he was making a lot of like super scary white woman moves.
Oh, okay.
During this episode. You know, they always, like, they're running in the forest with heels. All these mistakes that, you know, as they go throughout, you're like, girl, you about to die. What you doing?
Thank you, Vivian.
And I felt like we were getting a lot of that. Like, there was a lot of time where I'm like, no, don't accept, like you said, don't take the water. What are you talking about?
Okay, so would y'all have asked, would y'all have accepted the water?
No.
I'd be like, no, I don't want no water.
I don't
want
to share the same air as that man.
I was so irritated when he took the water and he drank it. I'm like, well, this is it.
I don't know. This is what I like about Darius. And I think the thing
he's
that...
He's very, very fearless.
It's not even about fearlessness. It's about his desire to connect with human beings. Like, mm-hmm. what we see consistently from Darius is his ability to see much further than anyone else is looking. And he's not judgmental at all in any shape. He's just willing to accept what's happening. So, yeah, this guy is weird, but he's a human being. So he's going to treat him like a human being. And, you know, oh my, I just didn't talk to this dude for a minute. And I think that kind of makes Darius... like beautiful and really special, even though, yeah, you know, the makeup of a good horror film is like, please leave this place, you're giving me anxiety, like your danger makes me upset, like let's move forward. So kudos to the team for creating that kind of space. I think the idea, the choice not to do commercials is a brave one, because that's advertising dollars you're losing. But I think it paid off in the end, even though I would have liked a break from it. Something I don't need a break from is Maria Menounos.
Yes. Oh, heck, come on, segue.
What? Segue game.
She's a professional.
Flames.
She is a professional.
The segue game is flames.
Yeah, flames.
I'm really upset about this. I'm so upset about this voice.
Yes. So for y'all out there, do you want to have fun, learn, and grow in all areas of your life? For those of you who do, we have the podcast for you. Hey, that rhymes. Conversations with Maria Menounos podcast edition is hosted by our AfterBuzz TV founder and drops every Friday on iTunes. Conversations with Maria Menounos features celebrity and influencer interviews along with secrets and tips on how to be better in all aspects of life. You know you need it. From health and wellness to career, relationships, finances, and more, let our Maria be the big sister you've always wanted. Just go to iTunes and subscribe to Conversations with Maria Menounos for free. All right, be sure to rate and comment, and when you do, let Maria know that it was us who sent you there, specifically me, Ivana, please.
Or the whole Atlanta panel. Yeah. You're being supportive and loving. Yeah. What?
Conversations with Maria Menounos, podcast edition. Check it out. All right, let's go. I'm ready.
Def do. She's got great advice. I can't, like, if people are like, oh, we can't speak to someone. I'm like, you're hearing it because it's good, and you should listen to it. Like, go check it out. Mm. Other things we should check out? That hat. When are we going to start mass producing the You Mad hat?
You Mad?
With the clearly, like... So, okay, Ivana, you're from the South. You had feelings about it.
Yeah.
I really like the hat. To me, it represented, obviously, the MAGA hats. Like...
Clearly.
Mm. And I felt it was a really awesome way to take back a symbol that has, to me, rather quickly, like, reached a status of the rebel flag, which is just, like... It's uncomfortable. Clearly, you don't like me. If you have that hat on and you say you're not a racist, I'll never believe you.
Ever.
And so it was funny for him to take it and essentially appropriate that. And, the fact that it
is that
Southern
appropriating
made.
White culture?
Well, the fact that it said Southern made, and he is Southern made. And I think a lot of times people not from the South think of the South as like old Dixie and like very white. But the South is super black and amazing.
We out here.
Yeah.
And so I like the idea of like... The fact that it's taking back Southern made, like, I am also of this place, I am also from this country, and I freaking rock. And I also like that they asked the question, you mad, bro? You mad I took your hat?
Yeah. Why you big mad over there?
I mean, I don't know. Like, being from the South, for me, I understand that some black people, they do take the Confederate flag paraphernalia to show that they're not scared of the flag. Even Kanye West did it for the one line that he had. He had, like, the Confederate flag, like, on the arm or whatever, and he caught flag for that, but... As a Southerner, I'm not ready to try and appropriate the flag. I was just actually down in the South. It is very, very real. Like, you can't... That I get it, but sometimes some things are just for show, and only something like that can happen in a show in the South, and only Kanye could have worn the Confederate flag, because black people out there, we don't do that.
Yeah.
It's not... And we live in a bubble, being out here in Los Angeles. Like, yeah, let's try and do that, but let's not.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same page a little bit, Ivana, because... Again, also from the South. And, like, when you saw a flag like that growing up, that meant you need to turn around.
You
got to
turn the car around.
Because you could have easily been in danger. Like, that was a sign of, like, things are about to get real uncomfortable and scary for me.
See, I'm not even from the South, but I lived in the middle of nowhere, Illinois. And there was a guy who's literally every window had a rebel flag on it in his truck. And his horn was the Land of Cotton. He would honk it at black people. It was very uncomfortable. I have heard rumors that there was rope in the back of that car and all kinds of crazy things.
Of course.
So it's very,
he's got the whole toolkit.
It's fresh and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that even if there's kind of a thing that black people are going to start doing, it's just not, it's not a fad that's accessible to all black people.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? Speaking of fads, I remember this is probably, I'd say like maybe 7 or 8 years ago, there was a small boutique designer company that tried to do that. They tried mm-hmm. to reappropriate the Confederate flag. And I can't remember to save my life what the name of it was, but they had jeans and shirts and hats and all kind of just different, you know, clothing items with different, you know, variations of that flag. Mm-hmm. And the same way you said, like, yeah, like, I can't get with it. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing that and I was like, I see what you're trying to do, but I can't rock with it.
It don't curl all the way
like,
over.
In theory, I dig it. And I'm like, yeah, let's something that's caused black people so much pain. Like, let's flip it and make it just like, you know, the N-word and all that. But I don't know. There's just, I have PTSD from the Confederate flag.
Okay. So
I'm like,
I think we can only just turn the N-word for now. Like, let's start small.
Jesus. I have PTSD over the initial reveal of Teddy.
Don't
specifically
start.
Please
Teddy from the shadows,
specifically because he heard the Stevie Wonder music and I'm like, I feel like it wasn't blaring that loud in the truck. No, like how did you hear it? What kind of alien are you? I was very concerned. What was your initial reaction to the reveal of Teddy?
I was, first off, I was like, oh, like it's an MJ knockoff,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, who is it? And at first I saw Jordan Peele had tweeted that he had like he was in some type of like weird, I want to say whiteface, but whiteface, that makes it seem like it's offensive and it's not.
But it is whiteface.
Yeah. But yeah, so I was like, oh, is that Jordan Peele? But then like we looked harder and you said it was Donald. And then as soon as I looked, I was like, oh, I see his little baby teeth and his little eyes. That's Donald. And it was just it's just too much.
I wasn't surprised. When he came out the shadow, I was like, of course this, we see somebody who looks like this. And throughout the episode, it was very clear that they were just trying to play off of, you know, how would Michael Jackson live if he was still alive and living in Atlanta, you know?
It's so, kind of crazy because they were trying to do a movie a while ago. I think, no, they did the movie. It was released in Britain where a white guy was playing Michael Jackson.
Yes, Ralph Fiennes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Oh, Lord.
Which, if you've seen interviews with Michael Jackson, he says very explicitly, like, I'm a black man. Please don't do that to me. And I thought it was an interesting way to explore the later years of an icon, still having him be a black man, but still exposing the, like, head tilt I think most of black society had. If you only know Michael Jackson from his later days and aren't familiar with Jackson 5 days or don't understand his, like, teen pop legacy status, like, that would be like if Michael B. Jordan, like, came out and was like, I got Revitalego and, like, nothing I can do, guys. Here's what's up. And then started,
don't put
like,
that
wearing
in
a glove.
She said, not on my man.
I'm just saying, not on my man. It would be that, like, level of shocking. And so I thought that that was really cool. Specifically, as we get into some of the other aspects of Teddy's life, the fact that he views his father as a suit, essentially. The fact that, you know, he and his brother are living under the same roof, but living completely different lives, and yet somehow still dependent on each other. He's dependent on the memory of who his brother was, where his brother's dependent on him basically not going insane and killing him. There's a lot of dynamics back and forth, and I was curious as to what you guys thought, especially from some of the symbolism, like the egg, which he referred to as an owl casket, and there's the whole idea of life and death wrapped up in that one gooey, very disgusting moment.
What do you think? Again.
What do you think of Donald Glover and his brother also wrote the episode, Steven? What do you think they're trying to tell us about the music industry? I feel like they're saying
When they got in a conversation about rap, I was like, what's Teddy for to say about rap? But then I was like,
I don't think it quite made it out of its adolescence.
Yeah.
And then that's when he threw the low-key jab at Jay-Z. I was saying like, yeah, you got Jay-Z, he's 65.
He's like 75, but like, you know, we got him. He's on our team.
I feel like, do you guys want to have, we should have that conversation. Okay, so did rap evolve out of its adolescence?
Yes.
Like, I threw that question back to you guys.
I think it had a moment where it started to, okay, I think that there are rappers out there who are continuously making rap evolve, and it's becoming greater and greater. Like, I think Kendrick, you know, Chance. But then there's rappers This era of rap that we're in right now is just like, I'm like, what's happening?
Not down with the mumblecore?
So I feel like we're having that, rap is having that screw you, mom, this is not a phase type, like, you know.
I wholeheartedly disagree with that. I feel like music, especially once it enters a popular space, which rap's been in popular space since the late 80s, really, you'll get two strands of it. In the same way you can look at rock and roll, and the songs that were charting in the 60s were very like, oh my gosh, super sweet, like go-go pop, daisies, like it's very cute, where the rock kids were actually listening to in their homes or trading with their friends in record stores was like heavy and about like society and war and all this other stuff. There's always a two-faced side of music. It's the stuff that's being pushed and sold and the stuff that's being created out of the life that's lived. So if you look at like Mick Jenkins Waters or No Name Gypsy's Telephone, like there's a lot of artists creating quality music. It just doesn't chart. And, you know, the teens got to have something to listen to, I guess.
Yeah,
like,
let's give them some stuff to listen
y'all
to.
Y'all could enjoy.
Something good and repetitive.
So I guess my main questions for this episode are, like, what are we saying about music and Black people's places in it? And specifically, if we look at the idea of perfection being a requirement to excel, which a lot of Black people have heard parents, teachers, mentors say, like, it's not good enough to be good. You have to be excellent.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was interesting when they're talking about the father that he wanted to celebrate parents and or fathers in general, and it wasn't just musicians. He also brought up Serena Williams' dad and, like, Tiger Woods' dad.
Joe Jackson.
And it just made me think about, like, there is this weird dynamic within the Black community with parents where it's, like, society views it as we have, like, deadbeat dads and, like, our dads aren't there. And then there's this extreme other end where we're viewed as having like parents who like push us too far because we have to be twice as good just to be on the same playing field. Mm-hmm. And there's no actual media, like in reality there is, but we're never represented as
two extremes.
We're never represented as reality. So I thought it was interesting that he brought up those like people, and it made me just think of like the music industry, how Beyonce lost to Adele. Not that I don't love Adele, but like Beyonce lost the Grammy Lemonade.
I mean, she lost to Taylor Swift on All the Single Ladies.
But those are
one of the most iconic music videos.
Yeah. But Lemonade, she literally went through every single genre of music and like did the damn thing and then still lost an album to Adele, who is not mediocre, but I mean, she. If she was a Black woman, she'd be a mediocre R&B singer.
She sure would be.
She's given us the same like, every album has just been a different iteration of the same album.
Good, y'all, but it's not groundbreaking.
Yeah,
not
it's because all. She's white that it's suddenly amazing and whatever. And you can get mad at me in the comments and say that I'm wrong, but I guarantee you that...
Jasmine Sullivan should be above
I'm saying Jill Scott, Jasmine Sullivan
should be doing so much right now.
But it ties very much into this episode that we have to be... 4 times, 5 times as good just for you to acknowledge that we're good. Mm-hmm. Like, our excellence isn't, like, for some reason, our excellence only reaches their mediocrity. Mm. And so,
ooh, get it, girl! Mm. Xavier also said, preach, Drew!
I got you.
Yeah, so, let's look at the siblings, then. So we see a lot of siblings in entertainment, whether you're looking like Wachowskis or who are the tiny Black stand-up comedians?
The Wayans?
No, talking about the twins.
Yeah.
Oh, I love them. What are their names?
Something. They have a movie called The Glasses, an animated show. They're hilarious.
I haven't laughed.
But even to like, can you look at the Kardashians? There's a ton of siblings in entertainment. Mm-hmm. As somebody who works in entertainment with their sibling frequently, I was like a little bit disturbed by the imagery here, and the fact that it was written by brothers brought up a lot of stuff to me. This idea that, do you guys think that they loved each other, that they had love for each other in their heart, or that this was just, and this was the deterioration of their like relationship, or was it more, they were rivals, and he was never going to be a good piano player as his brother, and therefore he wasn't making his dad happy, and therefore their relationship didn't even get a chance.
Yeah, probably the latter. I don't have a sibling or anything. I'm an only child, but so I can't speak like from personal experience. But it seems like the love was there at one point. But I've also seen sometimes siblings, they get too attached to each other and too dependent, And that's always weird to me to see like older siblings living together, like at that age. That's just, they almost seemed a little too dependent on one another. But I do think Theodore was probably really jealous of Benny at some point, because he was obviously going to kill them.
I think like in situations like that, because I do have siblings, I'm the oldest of a lot of kids, but I'm close in age with most of my siblings. And I think that when you grow up in a situation where, like, you grow up in the project, you grow up, you know, low income or whatever, and you guys really have to be the out for your family. Mm-hmm. There's this sense of, like, competition, and then there's also this sense of, like, who's going to be able to get mom about the projects, you know? And it's and it almost becomes, like, not that you're resentful towards one another, but it's, like, you have your certain way of doing things, and they have their certain way of doing things, and there is this weird sense of, like, I don't really peep how you're doing it, and you're not really respecting how I do it.
It's soul food.
Yeah, it's just very, like, there is, like, this weird unspoken, like, you have mad love for each other, but it is this weird unspoken competition of, like, who's going to be successful, and who's, even if we're both successful, one of us technically is more successful, and therefore that one
as siblings, we will find a way to measure that, too.
You know what? I'm going to have to go ahead and co-sign 100%, because that's exactly how it is, I think, with my brother, who I don't really talk to. And my mom is like, and my mom will play us off of each other, or play, that's it, right? So she'll, you know, like, there's certain things she knows she can get out of him that she can't get out of me, and vice versa. But then there's also times where she'll drop lines, she'll drop little hints about something, and then I know, like, well, let me go ahead and do it. Even though I don't want to do it, let me go ahead and do it, because I want to be able to have that advantage of saying that, you know, I did this, and I did it first, and so, I did it better than you would have done it.
So is there always, like, a subtle sibling rivalry no matter what? Like, does that never
I don't think
away?
It necessarily has to be, but I think it does.
There's somebody who's, like, really close with their sibling. I have one other sibling. He's 22 months younger than me, so, like, people would think we were twins or, like, very close in age. We have rivalries, but now it's, like, it's weird. It's about different things. Because we know who we are. We're enough that we're, like, you know, he's not trying to be a better writer or director than I am. And I'm going to try to outdo him in business. But, you know, if we, like, I don't even know what we fight about anymore. If better at video games, like, who calls mom more?
Yeah.
Who's the most loved right now? Yeah. You know? that kind of stuff.
No, I agree. One, it's the Lucas brothers.
Thank you.
Two, it is, it's, like, it's not necessarily, like, who, I don't know, it's weird, because my sister and I are 4 years apart, and my sister's, like, getting married, and she's pregnant, and there's this weird sense of, like, well, Drew's the older one, and she's not pregnant, and she's not getting married, and it's, like, this weird, like, well, damn, I'm out here in Hollywood doing my thing, why are you worried about me? But it's, like, there's always some type of weird, like, and it's all love or whatever, but at the end of the day, it's kind of like, you know, well, mom's calling me more, which is facts. Mom, you are calling Allie more, but whatever.
Get it together, mom.
Get it together, mom. But, yeah, there is, like, this weird competition for, like, affection from your parents, even, like, when you go into adulthood, which is weird.
It really struck me, specifically when we were able to jump out of the house, which was kind of the only breath or reprieve we got from the intensity inside of the house. When Darius calls Paperboy and, you know, he sort of become, like, turns up and is the best friend all of us would be, which is, like, it's a free piano, you should just leave that and get the hell out of there. The whole conversation about Sammy Sosa. Is it wrong that we're still ragging on Sammy, or does he deserve this for life? Is his dragging never ending?
I mean, if you used to be black and now you not, like, of course we're gonna rag on you.
And I feel like, that's never gonna get old, but we also need to shout out our chat, because our chat is super popping.
What?
Our chat, our live chat. We gotta shout them
out.
Okay. they're super popping. And Mrs. Richards said something where, you know, I'm, you know, like, I gotta work to survive, but I wish I could give my parents a rest. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. Mm. Like, that's something that's always in the back of my mind when I'm like, damn, like, I'm tired. I don't want to do this, or I don't want to submit to this, or I don't want to, you know, try and do this extra gig or whatnot. And I'm like, shit, like, I really need to get it, because I want to be able to give my parents the opportunity to rest before it's too late. So I feel that. Okay, now back to this, whatever. I forget who said it, but somebody said, do we think Teddy bleached his skin? And given as black as they were in the vintage videos, I'm going to go ahead and say yes. And then two, I feel like if you, I mean, granted, there is, colorism is real and colorism does affect people on a lot of different levels, especially subconsciously that you're not even aware of. But I still feel some kind of way if you actually go that extra step further to lighten your skin. Like, I'm low-key, like, I feel like at any given time, you're open to getting roasted. Because you, like, you bleach your skin. And then when it goes wrong, it's one thing, like, you bleach your skin, like, I'm, like, maybe super crunchy, and then, like, maybe I look like you, but I still, like, it's still even, it still looks good, and it still looks somewhat natural, but Sammy Sosa don't look natural.
He's pink.
Let's just be honest. Like, I love Michael Jackson to death, but it didn't look natural. Mm. Like, there's a lot of people that we're seeing who's lightening their skin, and it's like, what are you doing? Like, you look like hot trash, like, low-key, like, raw salmon.
I think it actually makes me sad. Like, I mean, I get it. The roasting is, like, funny. Like, when they were talking about he looks like a white man's penis, like, that was funny. But, like, when I think about, like, I'm Jamaican, and in Jamaica, colorism is a huge issue. Skin bleaching is a huge thing. And, like, I just think about how, like, I get treated in comparison to, like, my cousins who are, like, dark skin and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, it makes me sad because I'm never going to know what it's like to not... I mean, I know what it's like to be a black woman, but I'm never going to know what it's like to be a dark-skinned black woman, especially in America, where all of our features are celebrated, but our skin's not. And so for, like, I don't know, for someone to feel like they truly hate themselves that much that they think in their mind that this is the only way that people are going to love them and respect them, like, that makes me kind of sad. Like,
yeah.
Because I think it's, like... It's like self-hate to the highest form. Because mm-hmm. he's not outwardly trying to hurt anyone. He's not tearing anyone down for their skin color. Like, it's truly an inward thing. And he's like, yeah, let me just bleach my skin.
No, I definitely felt it. Because like I was saying when we were watching, I'm like, whenever we all found out about Sammy Sosa, like, anytime we Googled it, that was our reaction. We were all like, damn, what happened? Like, why would you do that? But I felt the same way, too. Like, there's jokes at the surface level, but then once you sit with it, you'd be like, wow, like, he must really be struggling.
And he was handsome.
Like, why would you do that? Yeah, so I feel you on that. Like, there's a struggle on the inside. What's and going on?
I feel like this is when it really helps to have a good support system at home, and it doesn't necessarily have to be mom and dad, because not everybody came from a household where it was mom and dad, because I know I didn't. Where you have that positive reinforcement about your looks. I have a big ass nose. My dad has a big ass nose. I got some decent sized lips. Now, at this age, I'm cool with my nose. I'm cool with my lips. But I remember going to school, and not only did I get made fun of my name because my name was Kelly, but I decided to throw that in there. I'm sorry.
Tune back in with us.
But not only did I get, you know, teased about my name, but I would always get teased about my nose and my lips constantly. Like that, and then that was like in the heyday when the Twizzler commercials was popping with the lips, and people would call me Twizzler lips and soup coolers.
Oh my and god! Like, that's
oh,
so
they
mean.
Would say all kinds of stuff. Oh, don't stand too close to Kelly. If he take a deep breath, he gonna suck you up. Like, they would go in.
Kids are evil. They would go in. So,
I would legit hate my nose, and I hated my lips, and I didn't really like the way I looked for a long ass time. But my mom, you know, my mom would always tell me I was handsome. My grandmother would tell me I was handsome. And it helped.
Yeah.
And it just sucks because, like you said, that's when you go to that level, when you start to bleach your skin, it is insecurity and self-hate at the highest form. And if you don't have anybody to kind of, you know, counteract that with some, you know, some positive reinforcement,
yeah,
it can go south like that.
And they clearly didn't have a lot of positive reinforcement because their dad was evil.
But I think it does definitely tie into, you know, the industry because, like, I mean, Amara La Negra, for instance, like, we saw on Love & Hip Hop, Young Hollywood, trash. Tried to come for her.
Trash.
Tried to come for her and was like...
So is he young? Is he Afro-Latino at all or no?
He's Latino, right?
He's Latino.
But is he also is he black and Latino?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
No, but yeah, like we just saw that whole situation with them basically trying to like whiten her and she's like, this is who I am. This is what I've always been.
Yeah.
My voice isn't going to change just because you throw me in a wig, you know, or like I dress differently or whatever. And so I think it's interesting how... we see Teddy get so light skinned.
Well, didn't they say something in there too? Like, I have to keep the lights dim.
Yeah.
So, what, I mean, if you keep a black person inside long enough, like, you don't have a lot of vitamin D. Like, but I don't think he's going to go from the skin color he was before to, like, your color. Yeah. So that was weird.
Which I thought was interesting also because, like, I had girlfriends in high school who, like, I went to high school in Florida. And so we would have, like, we'd skip school sometimes and go to the beach or whatever. And they'd be like, girl, I can't, like, they'd have umbrellas, but I can't get any darker. And I used to think that was so weird because I'm like, you're so pretty. Like, I would kill them. Like,
how? I would soak up all the sun because I was like, let me get gold and dark and, like, lovely.
Oh, I love when I have a tan.
Right? Yeah, no, I can't. I don't understand. But even I wanted to address your earlier point of their dad being evil. And especially as we look at, like, fatherhood, and we talked a little bit about how usually when we're talking about black fatherhood, it's like absentee fatherhood and the struggles of that. And I thought, one, it's really cool that we're going to look at other issues that black fathers and sons face, which can be like this overbearing personality, because I'm trying to keep your ass safe and you need to be excellent if you're going to succeed, and you need to know and follow the rules because the rules are very different for you and people will not give you a second chance. It's hard for me to see, because my dad in the very early years of my life, super hardcore disciplinarian, but I understood that it came from a place of love, not enjoyable, you know, but I got it. And in knowing his parents and the fact that his parents are from the South and, like, from that generation, like, they, we're not saying I love you. We're not hugging. We're not doing any of that. Like, I raised you so you could go out in the world and be an adult man, not so I could coddle you and you could be a baby. And it's hard for me to view parents like that as evil. Like, I don't think Serena views her father as evil. Like, he pushed her and maybe it was harder than she wanted. Even Beyonce talks about her dad, who did some pretty messed up stuff later in her life. Hello. But she talks about the building blocks and the way that he set her up to be successful. I don't know if it's necessarily fair, but I wanted to get your guys' take. Is that evil? Is that coming from a place of love? Is that something that needs to change?
Go ahead. I'm going to say each dad that he called off is a different dad. They're a different type of black man. Joe Jackson was evil. Like, we know that he used to pour hot water on them to wake them up and shit. Like, he's just an evil guy. Tiger Woods, maybe. I'm like, they don't have to physically hit their children, but if you're verbally abusive, like, I view them as an evil person. That's why I said it that way. But it's really weird and interesting to me when fathers are like that and we see the phenomenon that their children do become, but that doesn't, it also doesn't make it okay to be that type of father.
Yeah. I think it hits, oh, sorry, were you?
No, but yeah, I mean, but no, go ahead. Ladies first.
Thank you. I think it just hits a lot of different levels. One, the black community doesn't really let their black men have emotions. And so I feel like that kind of plays into it. Two, my dad came here from Jamaica. Like, I have, you know, a whole side of the family that are immigrants. And it's kind of like, we didn't come all the way over here for you to be
acting up.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I remember when I, you know, told my parents, or I told my dad, like, I'm going to switch my major and I'm going to move to LA. What? Who said that? Not me. And my dad was like, don't tell your grandparents. Like, they're going to write you out of the will. Like, they're just very hardcore about that. But I never took it as, like, them being evil or mean. I think it's because they sacrificed so much and they did that so that I could be great. And they want me to be great and they want, they in their mind feel like they have to do all these things to ensure that I'm great.
Yeah, I can understand that, definitely.
So she pretty much said everything I was going to say. I have nothing left to say. Darren in the chat made a comment where he said people have become really, really sensitive over this past decade, and I agree. And I feel like, speaking on sensitivity and things like that, because in just a lot of the different aspects of life over this last decade, people are extremely sensitive. I also feel like the handling and the way that kids have been are being raised now is so that they're sensitive to a fault. And while I don't feel like you need to be pouring hot water on your children to help them build character, I don't disagree with some of the parenting choices that parents make in black families.
Are you talking about spanking?
No, I'm just talking about the fact that you know, our a lot of the different households kids come from, you know, black parents are a lot more strict. You know, the fathers, you know, that are there are disciplinarians, and there's not a lot of leniency, and you are pushed to be 3 to 4 times better than your white counterparts because you have to be. And I also feel like because of a lot of us, the way we were raised in our families, it kind of gives us the armor and it gives us the tools that we need to make it in society and just be
But to successful. This episode's point, I think, because what I find really interesting about this is Donald Glover is a new father. I think his kid is now 2 or 3 years old. He has a son. The idea that I pushed you so that you could be great and better has a fallback. Because if, as Lakeith was saying, as Darius was saying, like, love can push you to do a lot of things.
You don't always have to be great. You don't always have to have sacrifice.
Like I said earlier, in my early years, my dad was a real disciplinarian. He went through a whole spiritual journey thing and came back and was like, let me just let people live their lives. And I quit a lot of stuff. I was allowed to try different things. I was allowed to be my own person. And because of that, I was able to find my own path. Now, that doesn't mean I was running around without any rules or regulations. It doesn't mean I still wasn't expected to strive and achieve. But I think this kind of lenience, this kind of push on young developing minds is a challenge. I think when we say oh, we're too sensitive, what we're really saying is before everyone hid a lot of their feelings and put on a tough exterior. And we see what that does to people's interiors. It's a struggle to keep up a farce, to keep telling people everything is fine. And I think it's much better to allow people to be sensitive or break down or cry or be upset about something so that they can figure out what it is that's bothering them, make a change, and be better, than to say, suck it up and move on with your life. I just firmly believe that that attitude cripples people emotionally and hurts them and the people around them in the long term, in the same way that Teddy was hurting his brother.
I agree. I look at how I have a 14-year-old brother, and I look at how him and my 9-year-old brother, how they are growing up and how, my parents have changed their methods of raising them in comparison to me, and how they're so much more in tune with their emotions, and they're so much more in tune with how they react to things, and they understand themselves better. And I think we're not necessarily becoming more sensitive. I think we're becoming more in tune with who we are as people. And I don't think that it's a bad thing. I think it's a healthy thing. I think the black community, we've had to be hardcore and strong for so long that any sign of weakness, we're like, oh, you're just being soft. Get it together.
Or you're going to get hurt because of this softness. Yeah, again, I just think that it all comes from a place of love. And I think that's why the thank you at the end was so important. I'm sorry that this happened to you. I'm sorry that you didn't get the love and support that you needed. I wonder how many people needed those words. You know what I mean? Your father should have apologized to you.
And the comparison of Stevie Wonder to, the Teddy character, which is kind of like the MJ character, and how he, in his mind, believes that Stevie Wonder made sacrifices, or that his blindness was a sacrifice, and how Darius is like, him being blinded isn't a sacrifice because he wasn't blinded to everything.
That's a really interesting comparison, too, if you think about the parallels between Stevie Wonder and Michael Jackson, coming out at the same time, both young prodigal talents, both left their parent record company to become solo artists of profound music and celebrity, and yet two very different lives overall. Stevie Wonder has never, at least outwardly, seemed consumed by fame, whereas Michael could not escape it. And if we're listening to some of our older generations telling wild, crazy stories out here, hi Quincy. Maybe Michael did that to himself, and I wonder if that was the overall message that Donald and Stephen were trying to say. Because even the idea of the house, which we all know Michael kind of boarded himself up in his home, idea of the gift shop and literally living off of a past success, something that you don't hold or have anymore.
Michael used to have all types of statues in his house and stuff. But that's what I say, though. I definitely feel that, because I'm like, oh, they're saying you know, it's the question again, like, how would Michael Jackson live if he was still alive today and maybe, like, in Atlanta? Like, this is the continuation of Michael's life.
But it's also kind of a reflection of, like, was the fame and all of that hard work and all of that, like, stern, you know, was parenting. It all really worth it? Because at the end of the day, you're boarded up in this house.
This is what
alone.
It looks like at the end.
And not only are you boarded up in the house, but the relationship between you and your brother isn't even a healthy one. Mm-mm. To the point where your brother is literally downstairs, kind of just, you know, closed off from everything.
Yeah, and plotting your murder. I wanted to ask you guys, as we're running low on time, what was Teddy's overall plan here? Because he says, you're my sacrifice. He talked a lot about sacrifices being vital and important to success and growth, and it seems like maybe he's trying to turn this place into a museum so he has something to relive the past.
I think it was the sacrifice was a sacrifice for the success of the museum in his mind.
A literal blood sacrifice.
It was a literal sacrifice. Wow. Like, even with just the drop of blood on the piano, like,
foreshadow.
A lot of, like, and a lot of, like, you know, witchy type, like, covens and whatnot. Like, it's a single drop of blood that, like, you know, is the sacrifice. So I thought that was a really interesting touch on, like, the drop of blood being on the piano, because it's kind of like
that was sacrifice.
I'm sacrificing to the music, but yeah, I don't know. It was just,
yeah, exactly. All of that right, like, there, because I didn't get all that, but I got it now.
Yeah, no, that's how I felt too. I didn't think of it all that deep, but when I saw the blood on the piano, I'm like, okay, whose blood is this and why? And then he touched, I'm like, it was wet. So, but yeah, that's kind of how I felt too. I'm like, this is foreshadow. You need to get out of there.
For me, I felt like he wanted to, and then Rich says it as well, he tried to kill Buddy and use Darius as a scapegoat. So, yeah, or Benny, I agree 100%. I felt like Darius was going to be the sacrifice that was going to allow him to get away with killing his brother so that his brother, he could restore his brother's celebrity and essentially kickstart this museum that was already
in
process.
I mean, you can now walk through the mansion where he was murdered.
Yeah.
Like, it would definitely propel that project forward.
Kind of like Elvis Presley's Graceland?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that what it's called, Graceland?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally, absolutely.
Didn't he die from an overdose?
Yeah. He's sitting on the toilet with
peanut
butter.
He died of some bowel complications.
It was wet.
So we talked about pain in the black community. We kind of talked about more like sacrifice and being the best, but not necessarily about the pain, which I think is the last major thing that the show was trying to talk about, and the idea of our pain selling as art. It's something we talked a lot about with slave narratives. I am not one of those people who believes we should stop telling slave narratives. I think our ancestors have a whole bunch of stories to tell. I would just like to stop telling slave narratives through the perspective of slave masters so we can, you know, get into what our people were actually going through at the time.
Look at that.
But I also think that we see it in our music, in our news stories that are popular. Like, janitor works for 82 years at a bus station, never takes a sick day, celebrated. That's not a happy life.
No.
Why are we? That's why. You know, mom works three jobs. Exactly. Mom works three jobs. She's a teacher with 4 degrees, but she still has to drive Lyft to support. Yeah. Like, it's a great uplifting story. That's not great and uplifting. That's awful. Our economy sucks. Like, that woman should just be able to teach and then go home and sleep.
It's almost like, see what she's doing and she's not complaining, so you need to shut up and not complain either.
Mm-hmm.
That part. Okay, real quick, I want to talk about just the fact how, did you guys notice the shift in tone when, you know, at first he was, you know, like, he was pleasant and everything
and
was
welcoming.
Nice and then welcoming, and then all of a sudden it just got really dark and I felt like I knew that this fine line was being walked on the entire episode, and I was waiting. And when Alfred said Paperboy told, you know, when they basically came to the conclusion that he needed to be more forthcoming and direct in order to expedite that whole process, I knew at that moment, okay, shit's about to get real.
Mm-hmm.
And even though Darius is really great at handling these things, he's very tactful, I don't know, like, I got really uncomfortable right there when he said, "You don't understand."
We all did. I was like, chill out with that attitude.
I mean, I kind of took the shift in tone and to be like, before, again, you were treating me as a person before. Like, we were having a conversation. We were engaged in discussion, and we were talking about music, and he had somebody to share his, like, desires with. Then you made me a business transaction. You took the humanity out of it. And my guess is that's something that, as a musician who has a crazy kind of father, pushing him to do a lot of work that he wasn't necessarily interested in, that that probably took him back to a lot of bad places where I'm not here for you, I'm here for your talent.
Yeah. Well,
okay, hold on real quick. Let me just get this out before I lose it. Okay, so do you think that things would have gone differently had he just continued with the pleasantries and just listen to all of his long stories and not been in such a rush? Do you think that things would have changed and maybe he would not have ended up becoming the sacrifice, or he was set to become the sacrifice regardless?
That was the plan all along.
Yeah, I think it was the plan. Yeah. That boy Darren in the chat said, can somebody explain where the robbery was in this episode? And I think it's a robbery of vulnerability. It's a robbery of, like,
it's a robbery of a life, too.
Yeah, I think it's something that...
robbery of childhood. That's
exactly
a good one.
Robbery of childhood. I think even, like, I thought the ostrich egg was really interesting, just because he had to really go to town on chipping it away. And then once he did, it was just, like, a complete mess. And I think that's how a lot of, especially black men, are. Mm-hmm. Like, they have this hard exterior, and when you continue to push and push and push...
Tell me about it, girl.
Right?
There's just, like, nothing there. It's just complete... it's a complete mess, and it gets everywhere.
So you're saying these men ain't got nothing in them? They ain't got an offer?
Well, because we have...
I'm kidding, okay. No, but that we break them before they get a chance. Like, the idea of this, an egg is a safe place for you to gestate and grow and become a living being. But he called it a coffin.
You don't even
get a chance. He called it an ostrich coffin, owl coffin. The idea that before life even began, like, it had already been decided and chosen for him.
Yeah, and maybe I'm, like, reading too far into a lot of the stuff that's going in the episode.
It's Donald Glover, so I don't think
so. But it was, like, kind of half... cooked the egg, like, on the
it
inside.
It was very runny, yeah.
And it was a soft boil.
Yeah,
oh.
And I thought ostrich that was egg. Interesting because it just kind of was like, it had you let this, you know, cook or boil or whatever the way it should have, it would have been whole and it would have been what you needed it to be. But instead, you put this pressure that was unnecessary, and here we are with this runny-ass egg that you can't really enjoy now.
That's a word right there.
Right?
That's a word in that. I'm like, I think also it's a rob for Darius, it's a robbery of time. Like, of all the things, he could have been... all the weed he could have smoked while he's messing around with this dude house. Like, damn, I'd be like, you wasted my time, man.
And also, he says that he's like, I have a 2-regret limit in my life, which was hilarious. Because
yeah, it was a 2-regret light... 2-regret life limit pack.
Yeah. So the idea of him, like, if I left, I would have regretted it. But staying didn't really work out too well either.
No.
But, like, you saw a homicide and a suicide and the sole witness as a black man. That's not a comfortable place to be in. Yeah. Nobody wants
but
that.
But somehow I don't think that that's going to bother him. And I think that if nothing else, it's probably going to make him appreciate and value that piano that much more.
He didn't get the piano. They wheeled the piano out as evidence.
Yeah.
Oh, he didn't get
no.
No.
Oh, see, I missed that. I thought he got it.
They wheeled it out of evidence.
Yeah, authorities got the
piano. He walked
now.
Away with literally nothing but a really great horror story for the rest of his life. Like,
forever.
That was a good discussion, guys. I really appreciated that. Thank you.
I did too.
Any predictions for next week that you want to do real, real quick?
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
I'm last.
Prediction. I don't really have a prediction because this season kind of is like one of those you just don't know.
That's true.
But I do want to see, now that people like in our comments stuff have brought up that County Clark is Chance the Rapper, I want more of it because now I'm like, oh, that makes so much sense. And I'm just like obsessed with that concept. And I'm like, I need more of him interacting with them.
Totes.
So that's all I want.
Kelly.
I would never put a hand on you, but I'm just saying, I'm not the only one in the world with hands. I feel like, if anything else, if nothing else, we are going to see in one of these upcoming episodes, everything get put together. It's going to be pieced together to where it's like, oh, okay, I see how this led to this, led to this, led to this. Well, at least that's what I'm hoping for.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, we only saw one little excerpt of Van and her homegirl, I guess, you know, in the, well, here's
crying.
What's coming next week. Yeah, she's like, I'm sorry, I'm so happy. I'm like,
Well, you know, the daddy is not happy. And she doesn't have a job. She don't have a man. That's going
to
be really awful.
Yeah, so I think we're going to see what it's like to not be happy for your friend who's so happy they could cry. Like, what does that look like? And we're going to see that emotion played out. So I think, of course, like, next episode is going to be about Van and her little sorry homegirl.
Okay, I'm sorry. Real quick. I don't want to cut you off, but I'm sorry. Let me just get this out real quick. I like how every preview that we've seen doesn't really give you much of anything. Because the preview last week for this week's episode, I thought it was going to go in a completely different direction than what it did. And that's it. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I know it's going to be weird because it's Darius.
Yes. When they said he was going on a trip, I thought he was going to go trip in a forest or something. And I was like, yes, let me tell you all my Burning Man stories. And then that's not what happened. I was like, I don't have any stories to parallel to this. Thank God. Knock wood. I don't want to reduce Zazie to just being the girlfriend character on here. But my God, let's get Earn and Van back together. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for joining us here back in Atlanta at AfterBuzz. Until next week, panel, starting with Kelly, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter, ChaosJ, Instagram, Chaos_Oceans31, Oceans, why? Because your boy's so wavy.
Oh.
Guys, make sure to subscribe right now. Like this video right now. Comment if you are listening to us via podcast. Like us on iTunes. You know, send us love over there. Check out the new website because they just redid it and it looks amazing. And if you want to hang out with me, follow me on all the things at OKDrewJ.
Hey everyone, again, it's Ivana. You can follow me on Twitter at Ivana L. Williams. You can also catch me on Wednesdays for the Star After Show.
Yes.
Hey guys, I'm Joelle Monique. You can follow me all over the internet at Joelle Monique every week at blackgirlnerds.com. Coming up on Heroes over at Collider. I don't know, a whole bunch of things. Just follow the schedule. I'm on Twitter. You can find me there. Thanks for joining us, guys. We will see you next week.
Bye!
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.